are back. I'd like to welcome you all back to the Vixen's Vault. Today is Sunday, October the 4th, 2015. Man, we are getting into the fall weather, aren't we? Even here in Florida, I am in Central Florida on the West Coast, the far West Coast. Literally, I mean, if you look to my west, you're going to see Texas eventually. I'm maybe a couple thousand miles, but you'll see it. But we actually had a front come through this weekend, which, I mean, we were literally in like the high 60s to low 70s in the morning, which to us, that means you're freezing. No joke. I mean, people were wearing sweatshirts, and even though it hit 85, they still had their sweatshirts on because they just didn't want to let go. They liked that feeling. But again, I'd like to welcome everybody to the Vixen's Vault tonight. Tonight, I am actually having a return guest on, Dr. Chuck Kennedy. We're going to finish our discussion from last week, which was, you know what, it's really interesting because with the paranormal, it's kind of a give and take with me. There are times where I really, really enjoy what I'm discussing. And then there are times where I really, really, though you guys can't see it, I want to put a bullet through my brain halfway through the discussion because it's not going where I want it to, or it's not what I thought it would be, or it's just not interesting. And maybe I'm strange, especially for, I guess, a female, because people say that to me all the time. Boy, you're a weird female, because I really like when we get into the nitty gritty of things. I want to understand what's going on. I want to understand why we have certain experiences. Are they genuine, or are they, you know, a psychological response? I mean, it's very easy for everybody to say, yeah, I've seen a dead relative, I've seen a dead loved one, or I've experienced a connection with these people. But in all honesty, when you take a step back, you also have to realize that there are amazing things that your brain is capable of doing that has nothing to do with connecting. It has to do with the fact that most of our actions and reactions, although we like to think they're automatic, they're really it's just literally a system thing. You know, like I always tell people, if it weren't for the fact that our brain is telling us certain things, like when you reach out to touch another person, I think it always floors people when you explain to them that you never actually really touch that person. There's no real physical contact. It's you do not go flesh to flesh. Basically, what's happening is we have a basic magnetic field around our bodies and we're repelling each other. We never actually really make contact, but the sensations you feel are actually coming from your brain. They're being emitted. Your visual cortex is telling your brain that, okay, you've made contact. Oop, boom, send a signal. We have feeling. And I always tell people, you know, if you just take that and let it sink in just for a moment to realize that's what your brain is capable of, what else can it do? With that, I'm going to bring on Dr. Kennedy, and you know what? We're going to get rolling into this. I know we're trying to get, is Chuck Thurston on also?
Yeah, I think I am.
Oh, there he is. Hi, Chuck.
Hello.
And Dr. Kennedy, are you with me? Oh, did we lose Dr. Kennedy?
I'm getting him back right now, Nancy.
Oh, it's okay. It's okay, Rocky. By the way, that was Rocky, my awesome, most awesomest producer. And okay, you know what? We're just going to talk to Chuck Thurston for a moment.
Technology will be the death of us all.
I'm telling you. But
I probably shouldn't say that since I'm an engineer, but well.
I'm telling you, it's just one of those things. Welcome to Skype. Welcome to the world. But this is my other guest this evening. This is Chuck Thurston. And don't get confused. I have two Chucks on my show tonight. So if I say, I'm going to have to say Chuck K and Chuck T. That's how that's going to have to work out. We have Dr. Chuck Kennedy, and then we have Chuck Thurston. And the phone is ringing for Dr. Kennedy. So I'm going to just hold on a moment. Technical difficulties. Please stand by. Just hang in there with us, folks.
Hey.
Hi, Dr. Kennedy. Welcome back.
Yeah. It's literally great to be back.
You are live on the air. Wow. Gotta love radio, man. Gotta love it. Okay. Let's try this one more time. I've got Dr. Chuck Kennedy, who is on the phone with us. And I have Chuck Thurston, who is a remote healer, who's also on the line with us from California. Last week, we had gotten into a discussion regarding, you know, different psychic abilities and what could cause them. Are they a reaction within our brain? Are they a natural thing that's allowing us to flow with the frequencies around us or reach out and touch those frequencies or even interact with those frequencies? And given that Chuck is a remote healer and Dr. Kennedy, Chuck and Chuck meet each other, I got to tell you, Dr. Kennedy, he's probably one of the most gifted people I've ever met in my life when it comes to that. And the funny thing is he didn't know until he was older that he was actually gifted. It was, I think, how old were you when I met you, Chuck? In your 40s?
Yeah, 40 something.
And literally,
it was kind of an accident that I found out I could do the healing thing anyway. I knew I could do the remote viewing and stuff like that and all the other odd things. But the healing thing was sort of like how did that work?
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I met you, and Dr. Kennedy, you may get a kick out of this because you and I have discussed how usually people who are a little bit more connected can actually sense each other. And I think I described it to you as a rolling beat. You can actually hear them. With Chuck Thurston, my description to him and to everybody else at that time was, oh my God, he's a disco ball. Because he was confused at the time and he wasn't sure how to ground, and he really didn't have very much control at that time. And I was like, holy crow, he's a disco ball. Oh,
well, I don't know if I have that much control anymore, even after all these years. It just sort of does its own thing.
Well, you've heard me say that a million times, too. It just kind of has its own on and off switch sometimes. There's nothing you can do. You don't even know what triggers it half the time. It just happens. But again, I'm going to let you two actually begin to talk. And Chuck Thurston, I know you had some questions for Dr. Kennedy, and I'm sure Dr. Kennedy has some questions for you. So that I'm going to side out for a minute and let you two talk to each other for a second.
Well, Chuck, it's great to meet you.
Hi there. Nice to meet you, too. So this is the Chuck Show. There's some other gal named Nancy, but
I know.
There you go. That sounds good. Well, we'll just chuck it all and we'll take over the show.
All right.
What is the furthest back you can remember anything as a child? How old were you, your youngest memory?
There's a loaded question because I think I understand and remember things from past lives. But in this life, probably 4 years old.
Okay. All right. 4 is about average. Now, you said you knew you could do remote viewing before you realized you could do remote healing. And then one day you kind of woke up and figured out they're both pretty similar. But how old were you when you first started doing remote viewing?
Wow. I turned things off at a point in my life. I knew a lot of things.
You know, that's interesting. Everybody that has gifts tells me that. That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, well, because when you're a kid and you're telling your parents things that come to pass, like, you know, the guy down the street, you better go visit him because he's going to die from a urinary blockage in a week or two. And there's no sign that they should even think that. And a week or two later, he's dead. You know, that's a little bizarre to come from a 4 or 5 year old kid. So at a point where you start thinking, well, okay, this is either insane or something, so I'll just ignore it all and not tell anybody. And then you sort of just put it in your back pocket for a while. And then after a while, you start realizing, it's going to come out. One way or another, it'll come out. It'll either learn to deal with it or you're going to have to hide it for the rest of your life. But it's going to force its way out at some point.
Pretty cool.
And then back when Ghost Hunters started on TV, we were running, Nancy and I and a bunch of others were running a IRC based chat room, and it turned out I was really good at helping people because they would start to describe some situation, you know, their sons in a high chair in the kitchen, and he's agitated and he's pointing at something. And my what I always call my oddity would kick in, and I'd finish the description for them. And I would tell them about who the kid's seeing, try to relate the situation, describe the person I see. And, you know, a real large percentage of the time it would wind up being correct, that I would describe somebody they would recognize. It was a reason that person would be there. They would make sort of the connection. And after that point, it wouldn't be so frightening anymore because, oh, well, it's Uncle So-and-so. We, okay, that's cool. You know, there wasn't a reason to be afraid of it.
That's pretty neat.
That was the remote healing part, but the remote healing thing came later. That was we'll use nicknames because nobody will know the nicknames, but that was with Midnight Babe, and she was trying to heal my hand when I destroyed it. And she was trying to send me energy of sorts to heal my hand, and I thought, well, hell, I can probably do this. So I sent it back at her, and apparently too much, because it threw an arc off the monitor she was trying to hold her hand to, and literally zapped her thumb.
You know, that's actually a good question, and I wanted to actually ask Dr. Kennedy about this, because I've always felt that there was a very strong connection to the internet, and people who are gifted and the amping of their ability. It's another reason why I very much believe in that a lot of this deals with, I mean, absolute frequency and vibration. When we were in the chat, it was one of the places where I noticed too, where when people would come in, I would actually have color changes sometimes. Like it wouldn't physically change. It would just flash for a moment to me, red or blue or green. And I would know their mood right away. I would know. It could be guest 314 and I would know the mood this person was in, especially if it was a strong mood. And again, I remember saying to Chuck, sometimes I wonder if we don't travel on the internet, because it's weird. You can read people very easily, and that's the hardest way to read people, through typing. It's the most misunderstood form of communication known to mankind. I mean, literally texting. It's literally more relationships break up because people are misunderstanding the context of words or the way it was said and it came off wrong. But for some of us, it's actually easier.
70% of breakups are initiated by women. So who's misunderstanding things?
No, they jump to conclusions. Trust me. If you're looking for somebody to put my own sex under I'm submarine them, I'll do it in a second. Believe me, I am one of the first people to say that I have a very hard time. I mean, I have very, very few, good female friends because I don't trust other females, number one. And number two, I find they tend to manipulate things in a way that aggravates me. I'll just put it that way. So it's just one of those things. Fun. Well, you know, it just,
well, getting
like
back
I said,
to your,
yeah, literally, I, my
getting
question
back to your
is
whole color thing and frequency. Color has frequency, and as we've been saying all along, everything is energy and its frequency and vibration. When astronomers were watching meteors and different things in space moving back and forth, and they tried to determine which way it's moving. Is it moving closer to Earth? Is it moving away from Earth? Is it moving across distance that doesn't relate to Earth? And they used what's called the Doppler effect, just like, you know, how when you're standing at a railroad crossing, as that train comes, as it gets closer, it gets higher pitched, higher pitched, higher pitched, and then as it passes you, it lowers down. And by watching the frequency, just you can close your eyes and you can tell that train is there and now it's leaving because it's no longer higher pitched, because it changes frequency. Now, when you're watching a star shoot across the sky or you're watching a meteor shoot across, it changes color. And that color is a frequency again. So by watching the color, astronomers could sit there and determine which direction something is moving, because it would change frequency, just like listening to that train approaching you and then go away. So frequency is really important, and it relates to color. And And that's how spirits can sit there. And I remember we put flowers on the grave of a spirit that we were always contacting. And then when we went and got EVPs, the EVP told my buddy Kevin that, thanks for the flowers, I like the orange ones. And Kevin goes, how does she know it's orange? And I go, because of frequency. They can determine the frequency, they can determine colors, and the mood of our energy, our aura, so to speak, is going to change color because it changes frequency depending on how calm we are or how agitated we are. Does that make any sense?
No, that does make sense. And although I'm not, I know there are people who I believe really can see aura, only because of what I've experienced, again, in the chat and just knowing that I can sense moods very, very quickly. I'm very good at that. Even again, the other day, my fiance said to me, you know, what are you angry at? Because he literally told me I could feel you from literally two rooms away. I mean, it was like somebody was shooting me through the door. And I was like, oh, really? Was it that bad? Well, if it was you, trust me, you'd know it. So, but it's true, though. You associate different emotions to different colors. Some people say that they'll give you a pattern, like this color means this and this color means that. But sometimes I think it's a personal thing, too, because to some people, some colors don't mean the same things as they do to others. And I know that for a fact. But the other thing I wanted to ask you, too, you asked Chuck how young he was with his first memory. Why is that relevant? I'm going back because that was a very interesting statement.
Well, when we're born, at the back of our brain is our cerebellum. And then as we're born, our first brain functions occur based on our cerebellum. And that's why we sit there and we shake our arms and we shake our legs and we don't do much. Then as we get older, generally between 3.5 and 5, our cerebral hemispheres start to kick in. And that's where our long-term memory develops. That's where our cognitive function, our creativity kicks in. And that's at about 3.5 to 5 years old. All of those memories
I was going to say, can I ask you a question if something's normal then, real quick, and then you can continue?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sure.
Because my first memory, I remember being in my crib playing with my busy box. My mom said I couldn't have even been, because I was moved from that crib when I was about 11 to 12 months old, almost a year. Specifically, I remember playing with the busy box. I can still describe it to you this day in full detail.
Most adults that have memories before the age of four, a lot of their memories are really, when you get down and really pick that memory apart, it's their first birthday party, but they've seen 100 pictures of that party. And what they're really remembering is when they were 7 and they were going through their baby book and they looked at the pictures and mom told them, oh yeah, that was your first birthday party when Aunt Helen farted during the singing of Happy Birthday and stuff like that. So your memories really aren't of the early event. They're of the stories that you heard later associated with the pictures. Now, your busy box, you don't have pictures of that probably. So those are real memories. And most of the people that really have solid memories before the age of 4 are gifted people.
That's, like I said, that's very interesting because I know it's something that my mother looked and looked and looked to see if there was a photo of the busy box, but there wasn't. And she said, she's like, you even knew it had a chip in it. Like it was, the wood was not right on one side. I was like, yeah, because I remember that I touched it with my hand and I got a splinter. And she just, she's like, there's no way you can remember that. You were too young. And I'm like, I'm telling you, mom, I could draw it for you.
It's not a criteria of being gifted, but most of the people I found, and this is why I asked, because as I'm doing the Project Psi and doing the Beam 24 testing on gifted people, that's one of the first questions on the survey And it's just, I hope by a year from now, when I complete the Beam 24 project, and I'll have all this raw data, including the all the biometrics from the EEGs and so forth, I'll be able to have enough data to put it all together where I can sit there and describe trends. And this is what most gifted people have. This is what they, this is the way their brain is functioning when they're doing a reading. This is the way their brain functions when they're at rest. And it's just part of the whole process now, of the whole Beam 24 test.
What's, you know, again, it makes you wonder, and Chuck Thurston, I've had this discussion multiple times about, you know, the fact that we think that everybody is gifted. It's just, it's not even exposure. I think it's, okay, again, strange way to put it, but I think it's education. I think it's literally furthering your knowledge that actually opens this up.
And like Chuck and I were saying a couple of minutes ago, he turned it off. I can't think of a single gifted person I've met that didn't go through a phase in their life where they suddenly decided, I don't want this. I don't want anything to do with this. And they shut it down. And some never turn it on again.
You know what, though? It makes you more miserable when you do that. It really, you get symptoms. At least I did. I got headaches. Oh my God. I can still remember the night. I mean, really bad nightmares. I mean, it just started manifesting in other areas. I shut one gift down.
You have all this energy and all this energy inside of you, and it's, and you don't find a release for it. And it's got to play havoc with your system. But I know a lot of gifted people that shut it down when they were young and or a teenager or whatever, and they've been fighting it ever since. But I have to agree. I think almost, and I won't say everyone, but I think a lot of people have, and probably everyone has access to it, but they never even bothered to use it as a child. Therefore, it's totally dormant. And they wouldn't know how to access it now as an adult because they've left it dormant for so long.
Well, or when they see inputs from the thing, they sort of pass it off as, I don't know why I'm thinking that. I don't know why I'm seeing that, but it probably doesn't matter sort of thing. It's,
yeah.
When you start paying attention to it, it starts making sense. And when you take the extra step to trust it, and that's hard, boy, believe me, learning to trust what you're getting that doesn't make sense, and there's a memory you have no idea you should have that turns out to be true because it relates to something, then you start thinking, wow, okay, that's pretty bizarre. But you know, if it's for a reason and it helps people, okay.
Well, and I talked to so many too that when they do get a vision, or however you want to refer to it, it can often be abstract and require some interpretation.
Metaphorical.
Metaphorical. So I think a lot of people, you know, I don't want to figure out, you know, I'm not in the mood for a puzzle. I don't care what it is. And they just move on to other things.
I agree with that. And you know what? It's funny because I think if more people paid attention to their dreams, they would realize exactly how gifted they are on a natural level. Because your dreams are 99.9% metaphorical. You know what?
But a lot of times they're just, I mean, because we get our dreams while we're processing our events of the day. And a lot of times it's just abstract stuff going through when you're having a dream and doesn't necessarily relate to you in any way. Right. And so it's hard, you know, you got to know which dream to trust and which one makes sense and interpret it. And that can be difficult a lot, especially when you only remember half the dream because, you know, you were sleeping and you don't. Yep. Yeah.
I have a question from the chat, though. Rocky, actually, my producer, and I know he's listening. He wanted to know I think he's asking a question I was actually thinking earlier. Get out of my head, Rocky. Which is, what about the cases of gifted people after a traumatic head injury or after a near-death experience where they were not gifted before that, or they were and it was suppressed, or they just were never aware, and they've had some kind of an injury or a life-altering event where it suddenly they're full-blown gifted, wide open. Is it if it's a traumatic, you know, head injury? Is it, you know, something getting knocked in the head that's making the connections go together correctly, or what exactly is that?
Well, and TBIs are interesting. I worked with traumatic brain injury patients for years, and they have their poor mind can be such a war at times because of the injury. So now they've got, they may see things, understand things, but maybe the brain injury is in Broca's area on the left temporal lobe, and they can't express it properly. Or Wernicke's area, where they can't necessarily understand what we're saying to them, but they have this vision and they don't know how to explain it. So their whole process gets so turned around. And in other cases, the brain injury is more minor, and then it blacks out all the other stuff, the normal daily stuff that don't seem important anymore. And most people that have a life-altering event, their limbic system kicks in, which is the middle brain. And the limbic system is also our emotional brain. And they've changed their priorities in life. Because they were so close to death, they look at it and their whole philosophy changes. Things that used to be important to them just don't matter anymore, because now they've woken up to the whole spiritual side, that we are part of a bigger picture, and our energy connects with the energy of every living thing, and their whole philosophy changes. And in some cases, because they were able to clear away the clutter of the daily bullshit of life, they can now look at what they feel is more important, and that's the bigger picture. And so there's a lot of different aspects that go into a near-death experience, or somebody that is close to death because of a TBI.
Well, you know, to follow that up, just to let you know, Rocky is actually responding to this in chat with me, saying you're spot on. And he wanted you to know that he had a motorcycle accident and in EDMR treatment, and that's when things became different for him. So he wanted me to pass that along to you.
Hey, Rocky, did you have EMDR as a response to PTSD because of the trauma, the emotional trauma of the event?
Well, the EDMR treatment was actually from PTSD from other things in life, not the motorcycle accident.
Okay, but it was for PTSD was the end result.
It was, yes.
Yeah, I do EMDR for a lot of the homeless veterans here in Texas, and I just do it as a volunteer. It is probably, as far as a therapy for PTSD, it is just unbelievable. Did it work for you?
Yeah, well, it did work for me. The first two or three sessions, I'm sorry to cut in here, guys, but the first two or three,
it's okay.
The first two or three sessions of the treatment was extreme. It was bringing things forward that I probably would have never thought of for the rest of my life. It also opened up some other areas of healing that I needed personally, besides my traumatic moments in life as well. So I would say it was probably one of the most effective treatments that I've had out of all the different treatments that they have put me through.
And what are you guys?
Gone to traditional therapy would have taken you 20 years to get as far as you did in a short amount of time with EMDR.
I agree.
I was going to say, do you guys want to explain to the listeners what EDMR is? Because I guarantee most of them do not know.
Well, EMDR is, and actually it's what the Department of Veterans Affairs and the Veterans Administration have finally accepted EMDR as being the treatment of choice for PTSD. And what a lot of people don't realize is every time you say post-traumatic stress disorder, right away, well, it has to do with the war. It had to come from the war. But there's an awful lot of people out there that have PTSD that was from maybe a traumatic car accident or an assault of some kind. Or in a lot of cases, what people don't realize is smaller events, but a series of smaller events, maybe a step-parent berating you constantly will also create PTSD. It isn't always just one event, and it isn't always a major event, but a series of smaller events. It's how your brain processes. When we process any memory, we process two parts. In our neurons, we record the event. In our limbic system, in our limbic part of our brain, we record the emotion to it. You know how you've heard the phrase that nobody will remember what you said, nobody will remember what you did, but they will always remember how you made them feel.
Yep.
And that's one of the important things of life. And that's because we record memories as a feeling. And if we don't process that feeling properly because it scared the hell out of us, well, then that or something similar to it will always trigger a PTSD event. So what this genius Francine Shapiro came up with in the early 90s was a process called eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. And what she does is through the use of synchronized movements, it takes your focus back to that event, and then you get to reprocess that event so it's no longer traumatic. Because here you are today, you lived through it, you survive it, you move down with your life is good. And in a matter of weeks of treatments, you can take somebody and they can just eliminate that fear anymore. Even whether it's a stressful traumatic attack or even something as simple as fear of flying and then the other phobia. You can get past that phobia using EMDR. And it's a really powerful but simple process. And it does amazing work. Granted, nothing's perfect. Nothing works 100% of the time. Before a process that was discovered sometime around 1994 and now is approved as the number one treatment for PTSD, that's come a long, long way, very fast. And it's really good.
You know, you got to wonder, though, when they're using that type of treatment to treat like a fear of flying, which, by the way, I have.
Before we move on an inch, most fear of flying relates to people who have control issues. And they
I was just going to say, my fear of flying has nothing to do with a traumatic event. It has everything in the world to do with the fact that I'm not flying the plane. And therefore, mm-hmm. I don't feel that anybody's qualified to take my life in their hands. So it's because I'm literally fine once I'm up way up, like once we hit four bings, which is 10,000 feet, I'm fine. It's just the takeoff. The takeoff drives me nuts.
Well, very few planes crash other than takeoff and landing. You know, the flying itself is a piece of cake.
Actually, I had a stewardess once tell me as I was explaining that to her that it was just the takeoff that bothered me. She looked at me and says, well, that's interesting because that is actually the most dangerous time of the flight because that's when the pilot's in control. And I'm like, oh, great. Thanks. Thanks. Valium, anybody, please. But she was also... She also actually was the only flight I didn't white knuckle on takeoff because she had me laughing where she was a little black girl and she was adorable, but she was sitting in front of me. She goes, honey. And I was like, yeah. And she goes, let me tell you something. I'm going to give you a hint. I said, okay. She goes, you see this face? And she kept doing like the wishy wash on the face. I said, yeah. And she goes, okay. If this face turns white like yours, we dead. I was like, oh, okay. That'll work for me. I'm just gonna watch your face. I mean, but it was like I said, it is a control thing with me, and I'm well aware of that. But as you probably gathered from conversations with me, I am in a lot of ways a control freak because if I'm not in control, bad things tend to happen. So it's
I'm not gonna comment on that because I've never been cut off in the middle of a radio show yet, and I don't want to get kicked out of this one.
You'd be fine, trust me. I take my hits pretty good. But I mean, like I said, I just, it's something where it's, it, I've known that for ages. But again, if I was to go to a psychology session for that, or go to one of these sessions for that, I don't know if it would do me a heck of a lot of good, because again,
you would pay a fortune. You'd be going through therapy for 20 years and it'd never solve it. But I could get rid of your fear of flying in less than a week.
Wow. I think every alcohol producer from here to Timbuktu would probably hate you forever, because they would have no business when I was on their flight.
Oh, yeah. No, and the airlines, they don't make that much money off of tickets. They make it all off the hooch they sell for the people that are going white knuckles on them.
I have a whole other problem when it comes to airplanes, though.
What's that?
It's the partially pressurized EMF chamber from hell.
Yep. I agree with you on that.
It's like flying with your head in a microwave.
Yeah, it is. It really is. Hey, Chuck, let me ask you, do you ever get to Vegas?
No, not too much. I actually grew up for a good half of my life in Sparks, so I usually don't head south.
I'm doing the whole Paraneural Lab, the Beam 24 testing, as I'm be going around the country next year. And I've got this portable lab, and I'll be setting it up. And I want to meet with as many psychics, mediums, empaths, and people who have had outstanding paranormal experiences, hook them up to the equipment, which is it monitors 24 biometrics, 16 aspects of the brain, blood oxygenation, blood pressure, pulse, respiration, and all these things, and then have you get a baseline of your normal, we'll talk about everyday stuff, and then go into some remote viewing and see what part of your brain changes as you're doing your remote viewing.
Actually, Nancy and I were talking about that, and the transcranial Doppler effect on the sender. I was kind of curious if you've done any kind of monitoring with the EEG and the transcranial thing of the recipient when the sender's sending. Is there any change?
I don't have enough equipment to do both hands right now. I can't be in two places at one time. But yeah, that's one of the things I will be doing when I get to Chicago next summer, because I've got enough people that are reasonably close together that I can set up at both ends and we can do both people at the same time. And
a local willing recipient, it'd be interesting to monitor them while the sender is and isn't sending, versus maybe get rid of the mental suggestion thing, have them send and not send in a pattern and see if the pattern goes along with some sort of response in the recipient. Because
I think that would be a great experiment. I love that idea.
We've tried early on. We tried sort of a very non-scientific thing where we had a group of three of us, and I was sending to one particular person, and I would intentionally send one time, don't send one time, and mix it up and record when I was and wasn't. And the recipient would record whether they felt something or not, and we passed it off to a third person, and there was a really good correlation. So that's, I would think the recipient, to be a recipient, has to have some sort of effect. Other than
I have to agree with you, yeah.
I think it's similar.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
I think it's similar frequencies. I think when you're able to affect somebody better, it's because you're running on your bodies or your brain are running on a similar frequency. I've said that to you, Chuck, multiple times.
Yeah. Well, my theory on that is that it falls into the Fibonacci sequence, and you can communicate with the ones that are in your golden ratio. That's my theory, and that's one of the things I'm hoping to prove next year with all this. But anyway, my point was, I'm not going to be able to get to California. I'd love to be able to. There's several people out there I'd like to hook up in the lab, but I will be going to Vegas probably in January. And I'd like to stay in touch. And if possible, if you could make it to Vegas, I'd love to have you in my chair.
Well, my wife keeps talking about our next great motorhome adventure being Grand Canyon. So maybe.
No. I've seen a picture of your motorhome, dude. Man, that's a beaut.
Yeah, it's kind of a monster.
It is. It's a. It's better than a lot of people live. I'll tell you, it's a very nice ride.
Well, we've gone north a bunch of times. She wants to head south for once, so we're thinking Grand Canyon. Uh-huh. So Vegas is on the way.
All right. Well, we will stay in touch on that, and maybe we can coordinate. And one of the reasons I picked Vegas is because, for people, outliers who want to go to Vegas, no matter what city you're flying from, everybody has cheap packages to Vegas.
Isn't that
know?
The truth?
And, if I was going to set it, I could go for more of the center of the country and go for Kansas City, and it would cost five times what it would cost for everyone to go to Vegas. So that's why I picked Vegas.
That's true. Yeah. But it's funny you say that, because that is very, very true. Oh, wait, we have another... Wait, guys, I have a question coming in from the chat. Swainy is saying, is there a difference if you monitor the chakra areas compared to the regular monitor points? Example, mind's eye chakra compared to F1 or F2. Does the EEG differ?
I haven't monitored the chakras per se, especially since they go through the whole body. That's one of the experiments I plan to do next year, see if I can monitor the chakras as well as the brain, and see what we come up with. That's a great question. I hope a year from now, I hope I have an answer for you.
You know, you got to wonder too, theoretically, you have to wonder if it would differ. I mean, it's, that's a really good question, Swainy. I mean, it's now you got my brain going too, where I'm going to be like, Oh wait, he says also, or CZ compared to crown chakra. Yeah, I see where he's coming. Yeah,
I think it's a great question, and I've wondered that too. I just don't know how to. I think because I got I was able to get a 4-lead EKG involved too. I think I'll be able to get a, because two of the leads are the upper chest by the shoulder. Two of the leads are by the abdomen. So I think using that, I should be able to analyze some of the chakra factors. And stay tuned, guys. The tests are in the works, and hopefully a year from now I have an answer for that question.
Well, you know what? It's going to depend, too, because here's the thing that gets me with this, because this is, let me tell you, you've been off quite a bit with this project. And the more I think about it, the more I'm kind of saying, wow, because – everybody, we're all different. We're all different, and we all emit differently. We all respond differently. Some of us are senders. Some of us are receivers. Some of us are both.
I have a question along that lines.
Sure.
Something I don't know. Is when it comes to the DNA and the human cells and that, I know it forms like a double helix antenna from my engineering way of looking at it.
Right. It's 43 pairs or 23 pairs of chromosomes.
Is the double helix always right polarized or left polarized? I mean, there is some half one or the other. Maybe senders
I
are
haven't,
right, recipients
there, there's
left.
No indication that DNA is polarized at all. And that's why I don't think – this is why I'm working on the neurons of the brain, because every time a neuron fires, sends off a signal, and when that signal gets to the axon, releases a neurotransmitter that jumps the space, the gap, to the dendrite of the next neuron, that's when a voltage occurs. And about 70 microvolts triggers when that chemical reaction occurs. When the calcium ion channel opens up, calcium goes through, sodium is pulled out, calcium goes in, it goes from a negative to a positive, and it gives off 70 microvolts. Now, that's measurable. The DNA, there's no indication, since DNA is in any cell of the body, there's no indication that there's any charge to DNA at all. So, that's why rather than go after the DNA is just is more like the software, and the neurons are the hardware. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, so it does.
The microvoltage that's fired off, is it strictly a on-off, like, DC pulse, or is there any AC component?
Yes, it is. Not to that. It's a DC. Just like, and as I explained last week, when somebody's having trouble with their muscles, the doctors order an EMG to measure the electrical activity of the muscles. When the heart is having problems, they do an EKG to measure the electrical activity of the heart. In the upper left corner of your heart is what's called the sinus atrial node, the SA node. That node constantly goes in a back and forth flux of sodium to calcium, and that's when it fires the electrical charge. It goes down the Purkinje fibers of your heart, and when that triggers, the electrical charge goes through, and the muscle depolarizes and contracts, and that pumps your blood. And then it repolarizes and changes back to the initial voltage. That's how an EKG measures the electricity of your heart. And then in the brain, I just explained how neurons, they fire neurotransmitters. The chemical reaction causes 70 microvolts. Now, in an excited state, you can get as much as a volt and a half at a dendrite. That's a lot of voltage. Where does all this electricity come from? Because batteries weren't included when I was born. So it's all these chemical reactions, but there are no chemical reactions and there are no voltage changes in DNA. So that's why I see DNA as being more like the software, but it's the neurons and the calcium channels in those type of cells that cause the electrical activity. And that's the force, that's the power behind everything. But who we are, our energy is, that's what makes up our soul. And as Einstein said, you can't create or destroy energy. So that energy is our essence. And that energy is what's left behind when somebody dies. The body gives out, but that energy is still there. And that energy goes to the Planck scale, 25 orders below the atomic level. And that's the lowest common denominator for all energy is on the Planck scale, as found by Dr. Planck and then verified by Niels Bohr, the physicist from the early 20th century. Now, this energy that's left behind, this is the essence that we use, but we keep referring to our brain as a computer, but most of the universe is not a digital computer. It's more of a quantum computer using quantum physics, where we don't travel in bits and bytes. We don't operate in pulses of yes or no. We operate in waves. And when an event occurs, that wave collapses into an electron that then becomes our coding in our microtubules of our neurons. Now, for a remote viewer, how can a remote viewer get their brain to travel to another place? How can they get their psychokinesis and their kinetic energy to go heal someone at a distance? And again, using quantum theory, the electrons in your brain and your microtubules, those electrons superimpose outside your body. And then because in the quantum world, there is no space-time geometry, it can then go do what it has to do. It can view at a distant location, and those electrons then can then go back in time, which takes them right back into your brain, and that memory you saw out a half a second ago, 1,000 miles away, is now in your brain, and that's how remote viewing works. Does that make any sense, Chuck?
Yeah, I guess. I've always sort of thought the viewing part is not so much that I'm going and seeing it, but that I'm being shown something. And it's not, usually when I see something, it's not something I actually made a mental effort to view. It's presented to me.
But how is it presented to you? I mean, how would it get there? How would it get into your brain other than electrons from your brain going to that location, seeing the event, and then returning to your brain?
Yeah.
I have an odd theory, but I have always thought that it's going to sound bizarre, but that this body is sort of the probe, and there's a bigger entity that's feeding me things and going and seeing a situation and assessing that situation and then processing it and feeding me what I need to know. Because it's not like I vision another place and a time. I'm shown it. I mean,
I was going to say it becomes a. I kind of see where Dr. Kennedy's going with this as somebody who's similar to you, Chuck, but not the same. It's a memory. It's a planet. Yeah.
And
I know what
the pineal gland in your brain has rods and cones just like the retina of your eye. Now, why in the very middle of your brain would there be an organ the size of a pea that has light sensors just like the retina of your eye?
Well,
and it's in the pineal
and a metal content that basically turns you into a compass. Spin me around, I'll point north.
Yeah, but this is to visualize. This is to sense photons, not to sense magnetic fields.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So from your pineal gland, you can send out photons to the White House, and you can see Barack Obama having an affair with Hillary. And then that comes back to your brain and your...
Okay, that ruins that.
He'll never remote view again.
I've got a great photograph of the Oval Office, and this is a legitimate photograph, and it's Barack sitting on the couch and Hillary sitting in the chair, and it was one of the casual when she was Secretary of State of the Oval Office, but the caption is, "Your husband did what on my couch?"
Okay, that's bad. That's very bad.
Anyway, that's not political. It's just, you know, it was a cool picture. Anyway, the point is, for you to go remote viewing, your pineal gland can release photons that can go to another location and bring that vision back to your pineal gland, and then your brain can process it. And you're sitting there in California just taking it easy.
And it is feeding you information, Chuck, if you think about it. If you're literally pushing forth, getting knowledge, and you have to understand, and again, think about it. You and I both know this. Time is not linear. So it's happening in the same exact nano moment, but it's still like a doppelganger effect. It's literally like
and
a doppelganger effect.
I know your theory seems to be that there's like a third party, an entity that goes, sees this and comes back to you. But the thing is, you have this ability and you've had it for a lot of years, but look at the person that's never used any kind of ability and they're in the OR and their heart stops and the doctors call a code, they resuscitate and they bring that person back. And there's a person who's never had any kind of gifts, but they talk about an out-of-body experience that they had. And they were able to meet with their parents and who have been dead for 30 years and talk to them and then come back and they're back on the operating table and then they're resuscitated and presto, they have this amazing story. So there's somebody that doesn't have a gift, and the only way they could have done that would be in a quantum world where their photons from their pineal gland could go outside the body and mix between the OR and the quantum world where the energy from their parents are.
Well, the near-death experience thing gets into a whole another thing of basically being born into a near-death experience. So maybe mine got a kickstart from the beginning. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, these are the things that I'm hoping to, you know, I've got a lot of questions. And as I'm going through doing last night I did an EEG and cardiac monitor and the whole Beam 24. brain energy area mapping, identifying what parts of the brain are active during what activity. And so I'm hoping to get as many people as I can in the next year. And then when I get all these together and analyze them, we can see what the trends are. We can see what's triggering one area of the brain to suddenly go from beta waves to theta waves in a matter of a second, and what triggers all these things. And so I'm hoping to be able, by mapping all these brains as they're having paranormal experiences, be it mediumship, remote viewing, or just a recalling a near-death experience, I'm hoping I can pin all these things down. I want to be able to use the hypnosis and take people back through past life regressions and monitor their brain while they're going through a past life regression and get all this data. And I think we can pin down a whole lot clearer picture of what's going on when people have these type of events. And that's the game plan. And so hopefully a year from now, I have a whole lot more answers than all the questions that we have right now. But that's what I'm working on.
All right, with that, guys, I got to start wrapping it up. It's 4 minutes till 9. And as we all know, Rocky's got a big show on after me tonight that I think a lot of us are going to stay around and tune into. I'm telling you. But Dr. Kennedy, go ahead and tell my listeners where they can find you. And after that, Chuck, if you're comfortable with it, you can tell people where they can find you too, because you do help quite a few people. But I'm going to give it over to you guys.
For helping others, you know?
Absolutely. I was going to say, I've known him almost 13 years, and believe me, he bends over backwards to help other people. He's a wonderful, wonderful man.
God bless you for all you do for others. It's regardless of what kind of gift the person has, when they help others, you know, they're just an angel from heaven. I'm at ProjectPsi.com, Project PSI, ProjectPsi.com, and you can reach me on Facebook, Dr. Chuck, one word, Kennedy, or on email, Dr. Chuck at ProjectPsi.com, or you can call me 888-583-1976. And Nance, thanks again for having me on.
Always, always. And Chuck, are you Chuck Thurston? Are you willing to give out your information where people can find you?
The easiest way to find me is probably just on Facebook under Chuck Thurston. I'm not very creative. The other aspect I'll have to tell people is I really am an electronics engineer in the aerospace industry. I won't say for who, but I kind of live two sides of the coin. There's the technical, there's the engineering, and then there's all the paranormal stuff. And I do a lot of paranormal investigations, and I belong to several loco groups because I'm the gadget guy. Yep. But yeah, if people want to contact me, they want some advice, they want some help. If they got a migraine, sometimes I can fix. Let me know.
Yep, but I can vouch for Chuck. He's been helping me out for many, many, many years. Not so much with the remote healing, because he'll tell you I'm a control freak. And I tend to pull the veil down on other psychics. I don't let them in. I walk around very much protecting myself. But I can tell you that he has helped me with several different aspects of what I do. He tracks my dreams for me, as well as he checks out from satellites when I'm accurate, which is kind of handy dandy.
I also tell her why and when her dogs are doing something bizarre in the house, because why it's going on.
Yes, he did. You can tell we are very, very close friends. But it's with that, I've got to get off here. Otherwise, Rocky's going to be late. Tune in next week and listen to the show. I'm going to have Robbie Thomas on next week. Robbie Thomas is an actual psychic criminal investigator. He has his new show coming out on the air. I believe it's going to be released next summer. With that, guys, have a great evening. Stay safe and, you know, try not to boil your brains too much just thinking about these psychic things. All right? Have a good evening.